Mini episode 971 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Just about every match from here on in is one that we should be caring about more than we do. I think, to be sure, the company thought we would be more invested than we are in this next one. And again, it's not that people don't care, but I think the buildup in a lot of ways has been flat for Kurt Angle and the new prize of the company, Ronda Rousey, against Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. And this is a thing, too, where this is going to tell us a lot about the tightrope that they're walking with Ronda Rousey, because it's going to be a tough thing having women in the division be credible against her, given that she's an actual real fighter who could snap your arm just like that. So if they were smart, they'd be already starting to lay the seeds here for, you know, women using strategy to stay away from her. Maybe somebody like Sasha Banks, when she faces her, oh, she's going to use drop kicks, she's going to stick and move, you don't want to get caught by her. So for Stephanie McMahon, being a particularly tall wrestler, she won't be in heels the way she usually is, but I mean, how much they're going to play that up, and physically the kind of shape that she's in and everything like that, because again, it's not like you can just throw anybody in against Ronda Rousey and think they're going to be credible. I know people are looking at how green Ronda is and being concerned about that. I have the opposite fear of, is anybody going to be credible against a real fighter? And I think, to me, that's the biggest story of the match, even more so than Kurt Angle coming back for WrestleMania, Triple H making another appearance, etc., is how this comes out and what we end up thinking of Ronda Rousey at the end of the night.
I agree with you, which is why I think this match is pretty much going to be Triple H versus Kurt Angle, with Stephanie McMahon avoiding the entire time having to face Ronda Rousey. And then when she does finally face Ronda Rousey, spinning Texas or whatever you want to do, a setup move, or that judo toss thing to her, armbar, done.
Yep.
Quick. I mean, quicker than a hiccup. It's over. And, you know, if Stephanie really wants to be, like, you know, be a team player, let Ronda pop your arm out of socket.
I was going to say.
Back in backstage.
You know, 2016 was awesome when they did the post-WrestleMania write-out for her. It was a good way to get her off of TV, and I hope that they embrace it there. But
this is my argument I've had, and I've posted this, and it bugs me, that with MMA fighters, and Shayna Baszler was just as guilty of this, when they come into pro wrestling, they all of a sudden forget how to do MMA moves. And it's like, dude, you know how to put an armbar on. You literally broke people's arms doing this. Do it for real, and just do it. Just don't put pressure on it. But don't do that fake half crap, like, where they don't tell a wrestling story, tell a fight story. Put it on it and break your damn arm. That's it. That's the match. She's done.
And this is the other thing, too.
She's not a wrestler, so she shouldn't be able to compete with her anyway.
I'm going to segue into the important women's match after this one because of my concern on this. First of all, there's talk that the winner of Asuka v. SmackDown Women's Champion Charlotte Flair, which, by the way, it's been very weird that Asuka hasn't full-blown transitioned to SmackDown with her move there for the title match. That's not like how they did it in the past. But there's been talk that the winner, and now supposedly it's supposed to be Asuka, they're going to keep undefeated for 365 days to face Ronda Rousey in the main event of next year's WrestleMania, which, again, you look at it this year, you're in danger of doing to the women's division what Brock Lesnar did to the Raw Championship division over the past year, of just making everything inevitable. But I have a greater fear as well. Before we get into talking about this match specifically, big picture-wise, of my thoughts about women being credible with Ronda Rousey, I think we're in danger of moving to a haves and have-nots world in the women's division, of where if you're an MMA chick like Sonya Deville, Shayna Baszler, when she gets called up, then you're going to be okay. If you're bigger like Ember Moon, Nia Jax, then you're okay. Charlotte Flair, because of her height. I think we're going to be getting to a thing here of where you're going to have the quote-unquote monster division, and then you're going to have everybody else being left with the scraps. And the problem is that's stretched across two shows. So you're going to have, on average, 2 to 3 women that matter on each show, and the rest of them just basically being glorified jobbers to the stars. I think that's the very real danger, unless they figure out what they want to do with Ronda Rousey. She's the keystone to this entire thing, I think, because they see her as being so important. They need to have her showing enough vulnerability to where people will actually be invested in can she win matches, but do it in a way that's credible.
I see your argument on this. And I actually want Ronda Rousey to be the female Brock Lesnar, to the point where she needs a mouthpiece so bad. Like, I want Ronda Rousey to turn heel with a Paul Heyman and her to be Brock Lesnar, where she comes in and does where less is more, where she comes in and does what she's set up to do, book her like a badass, but I don't want her fighting or wrestling on Raw every week. I don't want her wrestling on every pay-per-view. I don't want to see that, because then she becomes just another girl, just another thing on the show. Do I want her winning the title? I don't know. Maybe in a year we'll see what's going on and see how much she's developed, you know? If they build Asuka up for 365 days and she's been undefeated for 4 years at this point, then to ever face Rousey, there could be huge money in that, especially if either one is undefeated on the build to it. But on the same token, I see your point. Unless they're going to create like a women's intercontinental title or something, what do they do with everybody else? Because, yeah, there is the haves and the have-nots. And, I mean, one can only assume that the story, like, let's go with Asuka defeat Charlotte Flair to win the women's championship, then your story for a year is all the other women trying for a shot at the title, and she runs through the entire roster. Because she ran through the women's roster in NXT, she ran through the women's roster on Raw, she runs through the women's roster on SmackDown, and then there's no one left. That's when she gets to the super boss of Ronda Rousey, and then that's for a future discussion, is where do you go from there? But we're not to that point.
No, exactly. I understand what you're talking about with that. And that's the thing where, again, I think the calculation on how this match goes is who they feel is more marketable in 365 days against Ronda Rousey. And the thing to me is that there are very credible arguments to be made both ways. Charlotte Flair, again, with her ability to put on matches, with her own record of dominance that she has shown in the kayfabe sense over a period of time, with her physical stature, she physically matches up well with Ronda Rousey in terms of telling that story. On the other hand, Asuka, again, this undefeated tank machine that just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling, I think it's a coin flip on that part, on who's more marketable going up against Ronda Rousey. Charlotte Flair being Ric Flair's daughter is not to be underestimated in all of this as well, because having Ric Flair in the main event build for next year, because again, I do take them seriously, that they think it's a match that can close out at WrestleMania 35 at MetLife Stadium. So in the end, I believe it's going to be Asuka, and I think what you do is you move Charlotte over to Raw, and I think Charlotte becomes, God help us, somebody that's used to help build up Ronda over the next 365 days. There are some marquee matches. Maybe that's a big match at SummerSlam right there. That's certainly big enough for that. Maybe it goes on last there. But the loser of this match, I feel like, becomes part of the Ronda build to the next WrestleMania. Do you agree?
Absolutely.
Because that's a way to give Ronda something to do. Yeah, something substantial. So, yeah, I'm going with Asuka. Do you agree?
I agree with that, and, you know, I wouldn't be upset if Charlotte Flair won, but it's one of those things that she wins, people will be all mad. They'll be like, you built up Asuka and you didn't have her win the title? Because they're not thinking that long term, they're thinking right now.
Right.
And I do think it'd be stupid that you build Asuka all the way up and then she loses.
Actually, and I gotta say that I kind of biffed this as I was looking at it. When I was looking at matches below the line here, I think that are not plausible semi-main event matches, I missed one. This one does not belong above the line. A thrown-together match here for the IC. The Miz going up against Seth Rollins against Finn Balor.
Oh, man, I disagree completely. That's just a personal thing.
Sure.
And retain the title so I can see the celebration the next night on Raw.
Right.
He broke the record. And dedicated to Monroe, Sky, and Zanin. That's all.
Although, again, you know what would be interesting? I could buy that if they went with something along the lines of sort of a ripoff of AJ the night after Mania a couple of years ago when Paige comes out. I think it was also in New Orleans. What if Drew Galloway, I don't know if he's cleared, what if he debuts on Raw Monday night, comes out and takes it from Miz in an impromptu match? That would be interesting.
That that would be interesting. There's one thing I want to bring up on this match. Number one, I'm going with Miz to win. That's okay. My prediction on this one. I used to be the, when he was in NXT especially, I was the biggest Finn Balor fan. I can't stand him anymore. And I'll tell you why. He doesn't stop smiling. Every time I look at him, I see Vince McMahon's prototype babyface where they're making fun of him. And he just smiles and smiles and smiles. And unless he comes out at WrestleMania as the Demon Joker, like, seriously, stop smiling. I can't buy into it. Like, dude, okay, you can't be happy 24/7, 365 days a year. Quit smiling.
Well, here's the thing. This is what's interesting.
Smile off his face.
Jake, this is one of the things I love about pro wrestling, because I'm about to go counterpoint on you here. And this is, like, people who don't love pro wrestling don't get it. They're not going to understand what I'm about to say. There's these subtle things in terms of character that come into play here. I have felt like, since they formed the Balor Club and they put Anderson and Gallows with him, I have felt, and it's more evident than they're with him than when they're not with him, that it's moving to more of like a Scott Hall cool smirk kind of a thing. And that they're moving away from the wholesome smile kind of a thing. I've felt it turning into like a little bit more of a smirk, possibly prefacing a heel turn here at some point or something like that. Am I looking too hard at this?
Yes.
Okay.
He is just a plucky Vince McMahon smiling happy-go-lucky babyface.
Okay. All right.
You could be seeing something into it. I don't. I just see, like, you didn't smile this much at NXT. You didn't even smile this much when you first got here. Why do you keep smiling?
Well, you and I have disagreed on other things before, too. I certainly felt like Enzo at NXT was a great act, and I feel like he got Vince-ified on the main roster. And I feel like, again, but that's what happens a lot of times, and particularly once somebody is, God help them, a comedy face on the main roster. Comedy heel Santino, I got time for him all day long. Comedy face Santino was the worst. He was great as a heel doing the comedy, just intolerable. Worst piss break act I've ever seen as a face. So Vince putting his own stamp on people is usually problematic, Jake.
I agree with you.
It definitely is. And so we look at this. I kind of tend to agree with you that The Miz is going to win, but I don't care. It just feels like a thrown together kind of a match here. A match
if
that.
If it wasn't for the whole breaking the record thing, the cumulative record, and the fact that he just had a daughter, and the fact that he's from Cleveland, and the fact that, quite frankly, Miz, I think Miz should be in the main event. Miz is like one of the most over characters on the show. I absolutely dig Miz. His in-ring work has improved tremendously over the years. He got too much too soon when he main evented WrestleMania, and I think they should really reevaluate, whether it be a shuffle, whatever it takes, to look to, like, you know, he's been the go-to company guy. And he gets a reaction every week, and the crowd cheers him because they want to cheer him, but then he boos him because he realizes if they turned him babyface, he'd just be awful. They've done that. He's terrible in that role. But, like, everything they've done with him, I just think, you know, that if there's anybody who I would like to see have a breakout performance, it's Miz, and I absolutely love your idea. He wins the title. He comes out for Miz TV the next night on Raw, Galloway, whoever it may be, and then he loses it.
That would be amazing. But here's the thing, though. Is that with Brock Lesnar leaving, and we can talk about this one here next, because I want to conclude by talking about the two matches I'm actually looking forward to the most. But with Brock Lesnar leaving, there's still going to be an issue on the one show that Braun is on, and I think that's going to be Raw, because Raw is always the show they're going to prioritize, is that it's a little bit of the thing I was talking about with Ronda Rousey, is that if you have a champion like that, there's a ghettoization between haves and have-nots. Look at the guys who got the title shots the last year against Brock Lesnar. You were never going to see The Miz get a title shot on that climate. Finn Balor, who should have gotten a title shot, didn't because of the perception of being too small. So it's an interesting balancing act that they're going to have with Braun Strowman going forward. But at least with Roman Reigns being the champion here, for as much as we complain about the Super Cena booking and, you know, his fourth coronation in a row at WrestleMania, or what's supposed to be anyways, because 2015 wasn't, but yet another Roman Reigns coronation, at least he is portrayed as a mortal man, unlike Brock Lesnar, unlike, for the most part, Braun Strowman. And if we're going to look for a silver lining in this particular dark cloud of forcing this moment yet again, and forcing with a capital F is certainly the way to phrase this, at least there's that, is that you have it on somebody where Roman versus Miz, hey, you've done that match, and Miz has beaten him. It does open it up to more of the rest of the card, which is the way that it should be. It shouldn't be that every guy on the card would look legitimate against the world champion, but more than two or three or four guys should look like they have a chance against the world champion.
Yes, I agree on that. So we're going with the, I'm going to throw this out here. So my real prediction is, because the WWE doesn't have the cojones, the grapefruits, as they say, to do what I would do in this situation. Roman's going to win the title, okay? That's where my head's at. My heart, if I was, again, given the opportunity to do this, knowing Brock Lesnar is leaving, I'd have him win. I'd have him keep the Universal Championship and leave and go to the UFC with the Universal title. Twofold reason why. Number one, you want to get Roman Reigns over as a sympathetic babyface. You're trying to get him over as a babyface. Him winning the title, no one's going to. They're all expecting that to happen. So if he doesn't win, the crowd's going to be like, oh my God. And you have an entire buildup to Roman Reigns didn't get the job done. He was the one that was supposed to save the company, relinquish Brock of the title, and he didn't do it. Brock takes the Universal title, which quite frankly is a stupid name and an ugly belt. Let it be.
Yes,
Brock,
yes.
Bitch. Take it with him. It's gone. It's just gone. It's just his. You can, it depends on what they do with the reshuffled brand split. You could either reintroduce the World Heavyweight Championship, or you could just have the WWE champion be a traveling champion, like the O2 idea was with the brand extension. Now, mind you, this sets up the fact that, you know, you have feuds for Roman Reigns coming out of this where, you know, like, he recognizes that he didn't get the job done. And he's kind of like, hey, you know, he was supposed to be the chosen one, the hand-picked guy to do it, and he didn't. And when Brock Lesnar eventually comes back, let's face it, he's 40 years old. He ain't going on a massive run in the UFC. Let's just be real about that.
Right.
And especially with the money there. When Brock comes back, he comes back with his belt. And it's just like, oh, yeah, look at that. He's back. And he's got his championship that he never lost in your big money match with whoever the WWE champion is right there. And then you can do the, whoever that is, to beat Brock, and Brock can go off into the sunset in retirement. It's just something different. Because it's a foregone conclusion. Everyone knows Roman Reigns is going to win. So could you imagine that an arena, if it doesn't, it would almost replicate the streak. Except that they wouldn't be quiet. They'd be like, oh my God. And they would go nuts. It would get such a babyface reaction. And so, like, they realize, wait, Brock Lesnar's taking the title, and he leaves. And then that's why you can't main event with it. Paul Heyman just goes, fine. Brock Lesnar quits. Bye. And he leaves.
That's the thing, is that you're... That's why I don't agree, because you're sacrificing everything for that one shocking moment. We've seen this scenario. It's called Vern Gagne putting himself over in his last match to win the AWA championship, and then everybody else looking like schmucks in the promotion, like you're the second best guy. Nick Bockwinkel, the guy who couldn't beat Vern Gagne, hey, you're the world champion. So it's from a promotional standpoint, and you're looking at the long play here, but, again, it's a long time, until...
And I'm looking at doing something different. I mean, they don't do something different. We both know this is never going to happen. I mean,
right.
Roman Reigns is going to win.
Right.
That's just that. But Roman's going to win, and it's just one of those pucker up and enjoy it because it's happening. But it is something like, if that happened, you know, you can't tell me if that happened, your face, your jaw wouldn't drop if Brock Lesnar somehow wins. And it's just like, okay.
Well,
and I get, you know, it says that, you know, it puts everyone over schmucks. But if he's going back to fight in the UFC and he's got the title with him, I mean, I don't see any of those other guys going to the UFC.
True.
That's the end all be all. But it's just, you know, just food for thought. I don't think it's going to happen. But if it does, my God, I look like a genius.
Yeah, you called it. There's a clip and save moment if it happens. I'm going to say, too, we've also seen this. 2012, the whole thing of The Rock beats John Cena, and a guy who doesn't even wrestle, aside from that one match, of course he comes back subsequently, but so he's better than John Cena, who's the best of his generation. A year later, they work to reverse that perception, but they struggle in the year you know, between here and there. They had to feed Brock Lesnar to John Cena just to get the stench off of that. Brock Lesnar had to job his first match, albeit, you know, with a chain and an Extreme Rules match, but still, the lengths that you have... The lengths you have to go to, Jake, to get the stench off of a loss like that's why it's not plausible. I love you to death, but I don't...
That's the only reason why Roman Reigns could be the one who could take it, because the crowd's already going to crap on him. So you can... Because they're booking this as, like, from, again, talking to a friend, they're not booking this as traditional babyface. They want... Every time those fans boo Roman out of the building, it's intentional.
Right.
They want you to boo him out of the building. So what better way to do that than come out like, hey, man, I gave it my all? You know, even, hell, have Brock cheat. That'd be even funnier.
Right.
I'd be like, what? Like, he had it. And then, I mean, whatever. You know, this is fantasy
right.
book. It's
right.
never going to happen anyway.
Whoever
just,
the next,
you know,
whoever the next,
things up a little bit.
Whoever the next champ is looks like a schmuck. I mean, again, I love you to death, but I don't co-sign on this one. I actually think what they're going to do is the lesser of two evils, but... again, the lesser of two evils is still an evil, as guys who have voted third party as often as you and I will say. So, you know, that's our thoughts.
The only way the next champion doesn't look like a schmuck if it's someone like a Finn Balor or someone who never got an opportunity at Brock Lesnar.
That's true.
That's the only possible way they wouldn't look like a schmuck.
Although,
just to play devil's advocate on that, because then their argument is, well, you never gave me a title shot in the first place. If you did, I would have beat you.
I think Finn Balor would have to go full chicken shit heel with the Balor Club to do a Brock Lesnar was dodging
I
me
just,
gimmick.
I just threw his name out there.
Yeah.
I
was going to say, he could only say that in a heel context. He'd have to go heel if he claimed that Brock Lesnar was dodging him from getting his rematch, but... you know, let's take a look at, again, what is obviously the better of the two championship matches, and one that I keep having a recurring nightmare is going to be slotted into like 8 minutes on this interminable show, and that being the dream match of AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura for the WWE Championship. Which, as you pointed out to me off air, not the first time that they've met, but that has not been acknowledged in the build-up at all. It's just been, we were both over in Japan, we've both built worldwide reputations, yada, yada, yada. So they don't want to admit that this is a Wrestle Kingdom rematch. It's not even the first time they've wrestled on a huge dome show, as far as how that goes. But there was talk, and I'd heard this in a shoot interview, that, and again, Vince has been very slow on the uptake on a lot of things with these guys that have come in the last couple of years. Vince didn't think that the crowd would recognize AJ Styles in the Royal Rumble in Orlando when he came out. When AJ told Vince that if there was a spot for him and Shinsuke Nakamura in the Money in the Bank match last summer in Philadelphia, of all places, a hardcore city, Vince didn't believe it, and the place went apeshit when it did happen when they squared off. So there's anticipation out the yin-yang for this one. AJ, again, I guess it's come out that the injury he suffered recently was a knee injury. Hopefully he's 100% and ready to go. This thing, look, if you gave these guys like 22 minutes, they could give you a match of the year candidate. These guys could definitely, expectations, maybe it's the AJ Styles knee thing that brings them a little bit back closer to reality, because this is one of these ones where if it doesn't really seriously approach 5 stars, people are going to be disappointed. And I hate to say myself included, because you never want to put that kind of pressure on the performers, but they're both so great. And we've only seen it sporadically from Nakamura since he came up the last year in SmackDown. Some of it's the way he's been booked, being fed, as you said to me off air, to Jinder Mahal. You know, some of it is, again, his intensity in these matches.
Why did they do that?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, but it's like, that's one of those things. Had that never happened, I think the anticipation level for this match would be huge.
Right.
It would be so huge. You could have fed John Cena to Jinder Mahal. Who cares? It would have never hurt Cena. You know? Why did it have to be Shinsuke Nakamura in such a stupid way? Like, if you had built up Nakamura like he was in NXT in New Japan and something different and special, it would have been like, okay, but I have a fear that this audience isn't going to be the casual audience. This is going to be the sparkiest of sparks, Sparkertons. But my fear is like, you know, it's just like he comes across as like, and I'm talking to people, he's just another guy. But like, yeah, I don't get what the big deal is. Like,
right.
He comes to my house, I have a Shinsuke Nakamura autograph over my doorway for crying out loud. And you see, like, yeah, I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Well,
like, you have to explain it to them, and it's like, oh, man, it's like, I just, I mean, we are where we are, so we got to be happy with what we've got, but I just think it could have been so much more.
It is, and I was describing this a year ago when there was already a sense, just because with AJ Styles being on SmackDown, there's always, even though he was not in the title picture at the time, there's always the chance he's going to be back in the title picture, and with Nakamura coming up, I remember speculating about this time last year, maybe that could be the SmackDown title match in the Superdome, and that if it were the case, I said it would be like the Hogan Warrior for the Smark generation, because I really feel like that's going to be the case, because these are just about the two biggest guys right now in terms of the Smarks out there, at least the two biggest guys in the company. I mean, biggest guy maybe not named Omega. And the sad thing is, at one time, Finn Balor could have possibly fit into this conversation as well. But these are the two guys that you're basically looking at here. You're right that Nakamura's got tarnish on him. It's funny because you and I had seen last August 1st on SmackDown, John Cena did a clean job to put Nakamura over right in the middle. And again, and that was undone by what happened at SummerSlam. I agree with you that it was disastrous to feed Nakamura to him in that kind of a manner. And something that they never, ever, ever should have done. I think that's the reason, because they knew they needed to make this match mean something, that they did the Raw side where the champion didn't come out of the Royal Rumble. I think they felt like if Nakamura won the Royal Rumble that they could undo some of the damage, and maybe they have to whatever degree. I'm looking at this, and again, in terms of who needs it more, based on how he's been booked, it ain't even close. If you want to see what you got in Nakamura, if you want to give a chance for the guy to be all he can be, he has to win this match. The same is not true of AJ Styles, who is just about the closest thing you have to a bulletproof performer in the company right now in terms of wins and losses. So Nakamura wins this match. For the perception of people who follow the international stuff as well, that makes AJ 0-2 against him. And again, they're lucky that in the WWE universe, people don't know that, and it won't be as damaging to AJ. I don't want them to move him to Raw. I fear that they will, because again, I fear that he's only going to be fed to Roman Reigns if it happens. Keeping him as the man who built SmackDown Live, I think that works. I want to see more matches between the two, and I wouldn't fart at putting it back on Styles at some point, but I want Nakamura to get a run. I think he will. I think it starts here.
I really, really hope you're right. I really, really do. There's two things that concern me. One is the build-up to the match every single week has Shinsuke Nakamura as a smarty asshole saying, I'm going to beat you at WrestleMania with a knee to the face. Which almost makes me believe he's not going to beat him at WrestleMania with a knee to the face. That's, you know, that's one that has me concerned, just WWE style of booking. And two, will Vince McMahon put two of his top titles on two Japanese competitors? I hate to go there in 2018, but that's also a fear that I have, especially the fact that, like, the next day they're going to go or fly across to the Today Show.
Yeah.
Which would be fantastic. See, just came back from Moscow on the Today Show. Like, we don't understand what you're saying, but we'll be honest, it'll be Roman Reigns going out there,
right,
to do that interview. But that's the thing. But we'll talk about, like, you know, the build to this.
Yeah, it's
Could
been
you
awful.
How much different? How much better and different things would have been if you would have just stupid Jinder Mahal thing never happened.
Right.
Okay. Let's just go with that. Randy Orton kept the title till SummerSlam. Shinsuke Nakamura defeated him at SummerSlam for the championship, because why would Orton need it at that point? Held the title through Survivor Series, so it was Nakamura versus Lesnar, and Lesnar still beats Nakamura. Okay. And then we get to the Royal Rumble, and it's AJ Styles who wins the Royal Rumble for the opportunity to get the championship back, and to get vengeance against Shinsuke Nakamura. And it would tell the story of that, like, okay, like, hey, you have my title, and we have a past. That story would be so much better, but nope, we had to give two craps about India.
No, exactly. In an aborted experiment anyways, that was over before they went to India, plus he jobbed in India to Triple H, which just, so...
What the heck?
Yeah, I mean, it was just...
It's like the Punk all over again. Yeah, it ends with Triple H winning somehow.
Yeah. That entire disastrous reign was just set up so he would be strong enough to be perceived as being a worthy jobber to Triple H in his home country. But that whole thing, listen, here's a scenario I wouldn't have farted at either, even though it wouldn't have involved Nakamura walking out with the title. Nakamura wins, Baron Corbin still has the suitcase, blindsides him with the suitcase, pins him in Brooklyn. He becomes a nuclear heel to Smart Mark Nation in one of the smarkiest arenas in the country. Nakamura chases to get the belt back that he's already won. I wouldn't have farted at that either.
I wouldn't have either, but apparently Baron Corbin studies concussion protocols and he can't have the belt.
Yeah, yeah, that's what you get for saying bad things about Dr. Maroon. We're going to take the briefcase off you, which, by the way, to circle back around to that, we're in a position where I think they've booked themselves into a corner where they have to go 0-for-2 on briefcase cash-ins this year. As much as they're teasing Carmella being a part of Asuka and Charlotte, Carmella's not sniffing that belt because the winner needs to be kept strong for Ronda the next year. They're going to be 0-2.
I would like to see the Carmella do a failed cash-in though on Asuka at WrestleMania. That'd be kind of cool. She's going to make her have to have like a brutal match. She's going to make her, because they could sell that where it's like, let's say she's worked on her leg or something the whole match. Asuka barely sneaks up winning Charlotte Flair. She's beat down, wins the title, holds it up for a moment, and then FABU, and she comes running down and is like, oh my God, this is happening. Cashes it, hits her with the briefcase, cashes it, and still loses. Doesn't do anything for Carmella, but let's be honest, is Carmella going places?
Yeah. No. Listen.
That's one of those, I'm sure 200 days ago they might have had a plan for her, but ain't nothing now.
They already did that. It's called John Cena versus Sandow, and it was pretty much the end of his career. When John Cena, with one arm, beaten down severely, still beat him with no problem with the FU. So that was a thing where, again, I just thought I'd mention that there, too. They've booked themselves into a corner. They might as well cancel Money in the Bank this year because the winners from last year are going to be 0-for-2. You know, good luck selling the whole thing of the winner is almost guaranteed to win the title. Yeah.
Well, they can do that because it has happened like 90% of the time.
Well, that's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to go to the old statistical log. Like, it's happened 23 out of 26 times or whatever it's been. You know, they're going to have it.
You know, quite honestly, everybody kind of moaned and complained about, you know, oh, it's like there's no, it's unoriginal, you know, because it just kept being the same thing over and over and over again.
Right.
And, you know, this would be something different. The Baron Corbin one was just stupid. That was so dumb. It was just a punishment that was just dumb. But as far as like Carmella, yeah, her trying and what again, the whole idea to get everybody in the card, so get Carmella on the card at WrestleMania, and I mean, again, not going anywhere. So sorry.
Here's something I'm going to mention, and I'm going to be very clear in how I say this. That I had read a rumor somewhere on the internet here, and I believe it was more, it might have been secondhand from Dave Meltzer. So I don't know how strong this rumor is or not. I'm choosing to believe it because of how much sense it made. The rumor is that notorious WWE writing genius Ryan Ward wanted Rusev to win Money in the Bank and was subsequently overruled. Now, I say that, and again, I'm going to say in all seriousness, I have never, ever, ever in my life asked Ryan what is coming up. I would never put him in that spot, so I don't know. It certainly didn't come from him. It's something it's so surreal reading something about a good friend of yours on the internet and everything like that. You're one of the few people who knows what I'm talking about in that regard. So
yeah.
I have no inside knowledge, as it were. I would never put him in that position. And I think he's smarter than to tell me, even if I asked him. So I would never strain our friendship by going there. But again, this is just one of those weird kind of things of where I read it, and it's like, yeah, Ryan's a smart guy. That makes sense. It made more sense than putting it on Baron Corbin, of all people, particularly if they weren't going to run with it. But anyways, they didn't. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I'm kind of glad he got overruled.
Yeah, well,
because if that would have happened, we would have had Rusev Day. And that actually would benefit Rusev. That has benefited Rusev so much more, at least his pocketbook, from all the merchandise he sold, as opposed to Rusev in the Bank would have, just my personal opinion.
I
get what they were trying to do with it, but yeah.
You don't think Rusev had that in his back pocket? He would have said that the day that he won Money in the Bank was Rusev Day. We probably would have had it anyway.
I don't think Rusev came up with that. I think someone else came up with that for him.
Okay.
I think they stumbled upon that.
Okay.
Again, I think you give these guys too much credit as if they come up with a lot of their stuff like that. I don't think a lot of them do.
Well,
some of them do, don't get me wrong. But for example, for just throwing this out there, one of the best things ever happened with Chris Jericho was the list. Everybody thinks Chris Jericho came with the list? No, Jimmy Jacobs came up with the list.
Well, and here's
just one of those things.
Here's a good segue. Who are wrestlers who worked an awful lot with Jimmy Jacobs during his time in the company? Guys, in the last match here that we haven't talked about yet, and the match that, for as big as AJ and Nakamura is, realistically is being pushed as the main event match from SmackDown, and we don't even know who one of the participants is going to be for certain at this point. I speak, of course, of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. They are taking on the returning hero, Daniel Bryan, in the arena where he had his greatest night in his career 4 years ago. At WrestleMania 30, and a partner to be named later. They're still saying Shane Douglas, or Shane Douglas, listen to me. It's been a long show. Shane McMahon. Yeah, you can tell I'm tired after an hour and a half. Shane McMahon. But it's a thing where, for a guy who supposedly has the same kind of intestinal issues right now as plagued Brock Lesnar when he was doing MMA, he would be beyond idiotic. How weird is it that Daniel Bryan is not the half of a tag team that shouldn't be medically cleared to wrestle? That's sort of a bizarre thing. Welcome to 2018. But Daniel Bryan...
Very, very weird.
Yeah, Daniel Bryan has clearance. Shane McMahon doesn't. As has been pointed out to me by my good friend, fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Ron Glasnap, if the WWE wasn't so locked into this whole Cena and Undertaker thing, you could always do Cena, the whole Bella Bowes last-minute thing here of where he's Daniel Bryan's partner in this match and coming in. So we're looking at potentially two mystery partner scenarios at WrestleMania at this point. Again, you've got two potential Japanese champions on the same show, both in face versus face matches. You're looking at two mystery partner matches potentially, albeit it would be one from each show, but still two mystery partners on the same show. Potentially,
well, one show copies the other all the time, so that would make sense.
Well, exactly. So it's a weird kind of a dynamic here. I think the one thing that you can predict is Daniel Bryan making the hot tag, Daniel Bryan getting the big pop, and this is going to be a match that, again, is going to be just about impossible to follow, because in looking at it here, again, it always makes me laugh when defenders of Roman Reigns will talk about, you know, there are no organic baby faces anymore, you know, it's not like people just get behind anybody. Yeah, look at Daniel Bryan's return on SmackDown. He's the biggest baby face in the company by a factor of 10. I mean, as much as the people of AJ Styles and to a lesser amount Nakamura and some of the rest of them, it's Daniel Bryan and everybody else. So Owens and Zayn, there's a way to do this of where they go back to Raw afterwards because of the superstar shakeup is supposed to be looming, so they could end up going back to Raw. You get out of the stipulation that way. Don't know who Bryan's partner is going to be. Potentially, this is just a rumor. I've heard that they do it as a handicap match. Bryan overcomes the odds. I'm not sure I like that because I think it risks burying Owens and Zayn. Although you could kind of go with the whole thing of like Daniel Bryan is unbeatable in the Superdome. He beat the extreme odds previously, and he did. If you look back at the way they set it up 4 years ago, you know, you could kind of play a repeat off of that. I'm not sure how you do it in a way that doesn't bury Owens and Zayn going forward, though. So hopefully they do it with a partner. Hopefully Shane's healthy enough, but that doesn't appear to be the case.
Shane's healthy, then you could go multiple ways with this.
Uh-huh.
If Shane's healthy, you know, you could have him do the thing where Daniel Bryan gets a hot tag and Shane McMahon's, you know, it's very limited. He comes out there, yes, everyone's happy. He gets an insane babyface reaction of the night. Everyone's going absolutely bonkers and everyone's so happy to see Daniel Bryan back. And it's like, yay, such a happy-go-lucky moment. Or we could do the Jake Digman insane fantasy booking where Rick Morris craps on him as soon as he says it. Shane McMahon goes to the hot tag of Daniel Bryan and Daniel Bryan just walks away. You want to talk about nuclear heat. Well, I mean nuclear heat. That crowd would be livid. Livid. He's just like, nope, and walks away. It's too organic. If you built to the story where, like, he was, you know, if they didn't go through the whole thing of where he announced all the doctors how he was medically cleared, the only way that could have worked, because I thought about this as a scenario, is if Daniel Bryan just announces himself as a tag team partner, and then they agree to, like, the whole harmless thing, and he's like, well, fine, then you have to sign a whole harmless, and we're not responsible. He's like, fine, I'll do whatever you want. You let this guy do it, you let this guy do it, you let ankle wrestle with a broken neck, you let this happen, let me do this. And then he comes in, and the crowd goes nuts for it, and they agree to it. But the fact that they went through such a big deal to show that he's medically clear, I don't think they will go that route. I think think originally when the storyline was kind of playing out, I thought maybe that might be a way they would go, where the whole thing would be like, you know, it would be Owens and then Zayn against McMahon and Bryan, and if basically, like, if Bryan lost, they got to leave SmackDown because he wanted to leave anyway. So I could see that, but now, no, I think it's just going to be, I don't know who the tag team partner is going to be on this, if it's not Shane, even if it is Shane, I think it's just going to be Daniel Bryan, like, you know, taking them down, you know, absolutely triumphant moment of, you know, where he returns back, and there's your new number one baby face.
Well, yeah, and that's...
Enjoy your belt, Shinsuke Nakamura, he ain't having it for long.
Well, that's true, and again, and I think they're going to be doing a thing of where they save Bryan for pay-per-views, TV, and then maybe the occasional big house show like the MSG holiday show and whatever. But I think Daniel Bryan's going to be on a fairly limited schedule, which is as it should be. There's been more talk of Shane going heel, which doesn't make sense in kayfabe anyways, as his original grudge was with Owens. But that would be a thing. I'll tell you what, though. The whole you try and turn Daniel Bryan, I think it's a repeat of WrestleMania 28. Dave Meltzer likes to talk about the dichotomy of heat on the promotion, heat on the wrestler. That's heat on the promotion, bro, just like WrestleMania 28, when the whole place was chanting yes, yes, yes the next night when the company had them lose in 18 seconds. The crowd cannot be brainwashed to boo Daniel Bryan, regardless of who he sides with. He'll friggin' turn Owens and Zayn babyface before he goes heel for that.
I think he already did that.
He may have, and that's... You know, I just think, again, that's not going to be the way that it goes. But again, it's an interesting take on it anyways. But, yeah.
With up until this past week, I would have leaned towards that.
Yeah.
Just because. And the whole thing being, like, the speculation would be like, is he even cleared? Is he not cleared? Is he going to wrestle? What's he going to do? You know, if they would have kept his clearance being like a hush-hush, then you could get away with it. But now that everybody knows, he's got to come back as a triumphant babyface. We're also just dicks.
Well, here's the thing, too, and I'll leave you with this as we're going full circle on the show here. Something that probably won't happen, although it could because it's WWE and they ignore plot holes, it would be ignoring the large plot hole of how Shane McMahon spent the fall of 2003 wrestling. It would ignore the large plot hole in terms of what happened around the time of last year at Survivor Series with Daniel Bryan. But there's a tag team reunion that they could say that Shane arranged for Daniel Bryan.
Team Hell No.
Could be.
Yeah, that could happen.
Yeah.
That could happen, and I think everybody would be okay with it.
They ignore bigger plot holes than that all the time. Kane coming out. Plus, if Glenn Jacobs is a little bit concerned behind the scenes that his character has been a little too heelish with the primary coming up in Knox County, Tennessee, there's a way to get back in the good graces of everyone kayfabe sense, huh? And I think Tennessee still goes to kayfabe a lot.
And then he goes, I was in Knox County. Let me tell you, kayfabe's alive and well down there, brother.
I've been there as well. It's an interesting community. As a University of Tennessee fan, it's a place that I like going through. I generally go through there once or twice a year on my way to Atlanta, and I enjoy the town, albeit I don't know what stretch you were on as far as the road there. I loathe the way that 75 breaks up into like five pieces, like it's freaking Akron or something.
That was weird.
I hate that. I hate cities where you have to, in order to stay on the same interstate, you have to keep making changes, and you got to change on the left lane here, change on the right lane next time. It's a bunch of crap.
Well, I mean, and I'm pretty sure people come through Akron and Pittsburgh. Before we start burying every city here on the show, one other question I have for you before we wrap up this marathon session. They usually like to throw a couple surprises out at us at WrestleMania. If they were to do a surprise segment, what's one that you would be a surprise that you think might happen? I've got one in the back of my mind.
Well, at this point in time, and again, some of it is, again, the political climate and how they figure it's going to go. But if you're talking about something that would be a big surprise as we're sitting here now, but is within the realm of possibility, I say Hulk Hogan getting the un-Benoit treatment and being restored to the land of the living. So I would say that potentially as far as him coming out and being introduced. Don't expect it, but if you're saying big surprise, I mean, look, I already said I expected Rey Mysterio to be in one of the matches there, one of the feature matches. So you know, that I've already given you a big one with Ray Ray, but this would be bigger than that just because you mentioned Mark Henry on Busted Open recently here. Mark Henry's come out against it somewhat, or at least somewhat strongly. So politically, I don't know if it's a great notion, but Vince goes by his gut anyways. I'll say Hogan coming out and being readmitted to the land of the living if you're looking for a big one.
Okay, if Hogan's on the show, okay, there's only one thing I want him in, right? A backstage segment, you know, the crowd starts cheering, and as he's standing there, he's like, soaking in adulation, he turns to the left, and it'd be never more fitting time for this to happen, and then none of those Ron Simmons, and he just goes, damn.
You know,
that would be my take on that. Now, as far as like the one head did not involve Hulk Hogan or any political kind of political climate. The one guy who kind of makes a surprise appearance every once in a while, except for last year, our good friend The Rock. I don't know what his schedule was like. They can fit him in here, but I would mark out and thoroughly enjoy a segment where all of a sudden you think we're going to a match, and all of a sudden you just hear, "Ladies and gentlemen, Elias." And Elias does a little segment with The Rock. I think that he called him out on Twitter, and I think that would be absolutely entertaining. Of course, it's going to end with Elias getting buried, and everyone's going to complain about it. And he's going to take a rock bottom and a people's elbow, and everyone's going to be like, Elias is getting buried, boo, we did these fillers. But it would be so entertaining, and the people would eat it up. It'd be fun. And, you know, one of those things that if you can't get cracked, it's cold team up. A big stunner instead. Come out there, Austin, and be like, try to play guitar, because we know how great Steve Austin is at playing guitar.
Well, your scenario is a lot more plausible than mine. I'll tell you this, though, in terms of what you said about Ron Simmons, what I love about you, one of the many things I love about you, Jennings, is that you and I and others among us are of that dynamic of trying to play Can You Top This? So I've got another scenario of Hulk Hogan with a black wrestler on something they could do backstage. What if he was to be walking down the hallway, bumps into Booker T, says to him, I heard you were coming for me.
Oh, God. Yeah, so we shall see.
Folks,
and you know, the funny thing is, guess what? There's still a Raw and a SmackDown after this.
Raw and SmackDown, let's just, any call-ups that we think are going to happen. Authors of Pain are already way overdue in most people's books. I think they're going to come up. They feel like a Raw tag team to me, which is great because I would like to keep them away from the Revival. I feel like the Revival could get a good chance for a reset if they move to SmackDown. As our boy knew how to book them at NXT, and I think you could basically see that happening again. So I'm going to say AOP on Raw. Galloway makes a lot of sense on SmackDown, but as much as Vince loves him again, apparently, he's back in Vince's really, really great good graces. I think it could be on Raw. If that's the case, I'm not sure who goes to SmackDown. Very possibly Ember Moon, although I think she should not be on the same show as Asuka because she's already been established storyline-wise as Asuka's bitch. So given that Asuka, if she wins the title, is not going to lose for the next year, the last thing you want is Ember Moon doing jobs to her again immediately on the main roster. So Ember Moon probably to Raw. SmackDown's going to get somebody, but they're not coming to mind immediately. Maybe Gargano. Who knows?
I see Gargano going to 205 Live.
Could be.
I just do. I see him. I there could be a couple guys that get influenced into 205 Live. I see SmackDown getting Andrade Cien Almas.
Yes, that makes sense. Yes.
Him coming in there. And then one other guy that's probably like, you know, it would be great because, I mean, Sanity?
Yes.
They've been teasing them coming up for a long time. Eric Young isn't going to learn anything else in NXT.
Right.
They kind of got Chris Hero playing that he's never getting promoted. If he gets promoted, it's going to be like, that's the end of everything because he's a fat guy.
Right. Although,
yeah, I just, you know,
I could see Vince giving him a gimmick of sort of like doing the Akeem thing of like a white guy who thinks he's a Samoan.
Oh, okay. Oh, man. Those are the only ones that everybody you said, and then maybe the Sanity faction pops up on SmackDown to run amok for a couple weeks before they get jobbed out to somebody.
would love to see that because, again, SmackDown's the one show, especially now that Mixed Match Challenge is coming to an end, and hopefully there's going to be, shall we say, stronger pencil action coming our way here in terms of being able to turn our boy loose full-time on that. SmackDown, by default, is always the show that I'm more kind of looking forward to. I will say this, that again, in a lot of ways, because the company runs year to year off of WrestleMania, so I guess I'll make this sort of my last point, is that I feel like, because people talked again about what a great 2016 it was, ironically coming off of that piss poor WrestleMania, but that how they recovered from there, all the things that happened from there in 2016 into the first part of 2017, I feel like 2017 was a lost year on both shows. The whole thing of Brock as absentee champion who only periodically resurfaced, stifled Raw. I don't think you can have a strong show if your main event scene, which by definition revolves around the world title 9 times out of 10, is not good. And I feel like SmackDown, for all the talent on paper that they had in the last year, the gender thing just killed it. And I feel like they've been sort of slowly recovering since Jinder dropped the title. But again, I feel like 2018 is getting set up to be a good year going into the next WrestleMania, potentially on both shows. I feel like some of the things that plagued the company in 2017 creatively at the top of the card are not going to be issues anymore. So I think it's going to be a WrestleMania that we enjoy and that I think is potentially going to set the stage for a good thing on both shows. How do you see it?
I absolutely hope that on paper this is one of the best WrestleMania cards in a long time. That is on paper.
Yeah.
It all depends on execution. In theory, it's great. It's an execution is where we always often fail. And I'm going to go with the benefit of the doubt that, you know, it'll be, because we're heading into a shakeup and different things, but unfortunately I have a wait-and-see mentality. We'll just have to wait and see.
Who can blame you based on how things have gone? I mean, exactly.
Shame on you. 705 times, shame on me.
Exactly. So we'll have to see how it goes. But as is always the case, and dating back to the old Sports Talk Network, guys, when you and I were the fifth Beatles on the single greatest pro wrestling show of all time, Sunday Night Submission. Although, again, I will say Squared Circle Gazette. Shout out to my friend Liam O'Rourke and the guys, because I feel like, again, that is pretty much a Sunday Night Submission clone as far as quality and how great they are. So I feel like the greatness of that show has been equaled, even if it will never be eclipsed. What those guys are doing, and Liam O'Rourke, by the way, props to him for being a Wrestling Observer Newsletter winner with his book of the year, the excellent biography that he had of Brian Pillman. But again, you and I were the fifth Beatles on the greatest pro wrestling show of all time, Sunday Night Submission. So you and I have been doing this for a long time, my friend, and it never gets old. It's a pleasure talking wrestling with you like it is with few other people on God's green earth, my friend. Thank you so much for being available.
Oh, my pleasure. It was a great time, and yeah, I look forward to it.
All right, my friend. We'll see what happens at WrestleMania 34. We've taken you through the entire week. Thank you for joining us here on the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.